Stillman versus Joe Rexroad. Now on Stillman and Company
on ESPN
102.5 The Game.
Ah, yes. Jared versus Joe. We didn't have it earlier this week on Stilly's program, so we've called an audible, and we're doing it this morning. Joe, live from the beach, living in a nice little happy vacation land out there, and we're about to totally ruin it. Jared, good morning. Welcome to the program. How are we doing?
I am doing fabulous. I was worried about Joe. I knew he was at the beach this week, and I saw the hurricanes were coming, but I guess Joe's okay.
I can't confirm, Joe.
Thanks for your concern.
Joe must be on Manhattan Beach.
Did Stilly know that we were doing Jared versus Joe?
Yeah. I think it was his idea.
But I didn't know.
I know. Okay. Which makes it even better.
Well, you're inspiring. Not prepared. I woke up 5 minutes ago, Joe, so I think you should have an advantage here.
Oh, I'm sure you spent all night in your film room.
I was at the Predators game last night watching Scott Wedgwood.
Yeah, what'd you think of that?
I think he stinks.
One game? We're already throwing in the towel?
For one game, I think he stinks.
Well, he did not play well last
apparently
night.
Adam says the preseason he stunk too. You were watching that. I have to take your word for it.
He was not great in the preseason either. We'll see if it gets a little better for Scott Wedgwood moving forward here. All right. Paul Kuharsky has been asking Brian Callahan about this week. He's asked Will Levis about it. He came out with a story at paulkuharsky.com about the lack of wow plays, wow throws from Will Levis. You know, obviously the turnovers are the main thing that we focused on with Will Levis to this point. But how concerned are you, Jared? We'll start with you, with the lack of wow throws from Will Levis so far this year.
Yeah, I mean, he has had the wow turnovers. He has not had the wow throws that are wow in a good way. And I actually thought Levis's answer, because Paul asked him about it too, I thought that was pretty eye-opening when he said, you know, maybe sometimes last year those plays weren't needed. And it took me back to an Albert Breer article that was written in Sports Illustrated in May, which was called The Continuing Education of Will Levis. And what it was Brian Callahan and Will Levis were talking about, again, some of the wow throws he made last year that were bad decisions by Brian Callahan standards. You know, there was one that they highlighted against Atlanta where Levis, with a blitzing defender in his face, chucked a ball off his back foot 40 yards down the field. It hit Treylon Burks in the hands. You guys would be shocked to know Burks didn't catch it. But it hit Burks square in the hands in double coverage. And Brian Callahan highlighted that was an incredible throw and not a lot of people can make it. But it was a terrible decision because Chig was releasing in the flat right at the last second, and Levis can just drop it off to Chig, who can pick up 10 yards and get a first down. And so it was kind of the continuing education of Will Levis in May was this idea that, hey, let's eliminate the unnecessary here. Even though sometimes it looks good, let's eliminate the unnecessary and take what's given to us. Or as they say, master the mundane. Let's do that as opposed to kind of some of these wow plays. What I think it's actually done, I think the intention, now, everybody always has good intentions for the most part. I think the intention was, let's kind of keep some of the special things he does, but try to eliminate the opportunities for the bonehead plays. What has happened is the opposite, which is they've eliminated, by trying to get Levis to be more conservative, they've eliminated some of those wow plays, and for some reason they can't shake the bad turnovers and boneheaded plays and everything else off. And I think part of that is, if Levis takes five shots down the field and he connects on two, but one gets intercepted, well, that's not that bad. But if Levis takes one shot down the field and it gets intercepted, now we don't have the other two to balance it out. So I think that it's alarming. And I thought Levis's answer was very alarming about why he hasn't produced the wow plays.
Joe,
I think they need a lot more nice throws. You know, wow throws are great, but just string together, you know, and look, they've had a few drives where it's like, okay, there's a good, you know, 15 yards in the middle of the zone, he finds Tyler Boyd, they get into a rhythm, they move the ball. I mean, they need more just solid good stuff before I even worry about that. I think that there's something to what Jared said about the, you know, the Monday, I mean, Brian Callahan has talked so much about that, right? About, like, just take, you know, take, and Burrow's so good at that. Just take what they give you, and then you find your opportunity to take a shot. I mean, the most wild throw situation we've had with Levis was the game, you know, the deep throws in the, and I know Jared's like, oh, that was lucky in the TD to Ridley. That's fine. Bottom line is I'll take that throw where really only Ridley could catch it, whether maybe it was a total luck out by Levis, but that's how it turned out. And the throw that Burks, there's a lot of debate on our station, but I mean, to me, has to come away with. There's an example of, you know, the people watching film of that play are seeing, I don't even remember who it was, you know, somebody else wide open in the flat or whatever. That's great. But if the first option on a play is that play and they determined, yeah, you should have thrown it, that it was there, then it doesn't matter who else is open on a play, you know?
Right.
That's the play. That's your first read. So to me, it's just the entire passing game needs to get to the point where there's more just solid, good throws and some consistency and rhythm. And then I think you'll have more opportunity with the wild throws.
See, I don't think he can do that. I hear what you're saying and I agree. And I think that was Brian Callahan's intention this year, which was, hey, let's take what they're giving us and then let's try to, you know, go for the home run every now and then. And let's try to buckle out some of that, you know, let's try to get rid of some of that bad decision making, you know, by just mastering the mundane, taking what they're giving you. And what it's turned out is, in my opinion, has been kind of the opposite effect, which is the good things he was doing last year, he's now not doing them anymore because he's focused on, you know, oh, well, the coaches want me to check it down here and the coaches don't want me to take the shot there. And there's one stat that if I was evaluating Brian Callahan, I would need some explaining on. And this is, again, not to say that the Brian Callahan has the best roster in the world and everything else, but Derrick Henry right now is averaging 6 yards a carry with the Baltimore Ravens. Will Levis is right now averaging 6.2 yards per attempt. That is unfathomable to me. The fact that Will Levis last year averaged 7.1 yards per attempt without Calvin Ridley on his team and is averaging what Derrick Henry is averaging on a rush with Calvin Ridley on his team. There's got to be some explanation for that. And I think it may be that they spent too much time trying to convince him to check it down and play safe and everything else. And I'm thinking, you know what? I think Levis might be one of these guys that you're going to live with the good and live with the bad, but you have to let him, you have to encourage him to be a little crazy in order to get the good out of him.
Joe, we'll start with you on this one. How would you evaluate Brian Callahan's play calling through the first four games?
I feel like at times, again, they actually have had some, you know, touchdown drives. I mean, I even like the second half against the against the Packers, they had a really, like, wow, they put together a drive. It wasn't just like the early stuff. I think it's been fine. I don't have a huge issue with the play calling itself. You know, I think that game, you look at it at the end and you're like, man, this team has to run the football. And I think those two backs had like 33 yards combined in that game. And you know, that can also be deceiving because when you're down multiple scores most of the day, you probably are going to adjust what you're doing on offense. I mean, that would be my quibble is don't you have to me with this team, you have to emphasize the run. You have to have balance, but you have to, like, though, that's where I think your offensive line is most effective. Those backs are good. Pollard has been really good. So that would be my quibble. But as far as I haven't sat there a lot this year and said, what the heck was that? You know, there've been a few calls. Of course, there always will be. I don't think it's been bad or alarming. I mean, I still think that this offense has some parts that don't function very well. And of course, it's on him to figure that out and to, you know, to design things during the week, before you get to the play calling, to hide your weaknesses and emphasize your strengths. But overall, I think it's been okay. It's been fine. I think he has promise as a play caller.
I have a lot of problems with what I've seen from Brian Callahan so far, and play calling is actually not towards the top of the list. I mean, if I, you know, they've had three guys the last 3 years call plays. I don't know if any of them are any good. I guess we'll see with the Jets.
Todd Downing coming on back, baby.
Yeah, we'll see if any of these guys are any good. They've had three separate guys call the plays. They haven't had a right tackle for the last 3 years, and it hadn't made a difference. And I do think that there's a certain extent of this, which is how many plays can you really call when you can't block? My issues with Brian Callahan right now, number one, I think they're coddling Will Levis to the nth degree, and I don't mean publicly. Like, publicly, you know, defend your guy, say whatever. But when Will Levis gets up to the podium the other day and says, yeah, they sent me video of Tom Brady throwing the same interception I threw in the Dolphins game to Von Miller in the AFC title game. And, you know, yesterday Coach Callahan sent me an interception that Joe Burrow threw and said, Joe Burrow's a good player, and so it makes my interceptions okay. I mean, that to me feels like peak coddling. And so I think they're trying to use positive reinforcement, you know, in order to encourage Levis, and maybe that's...
And Jared wants them to shame him and make him walk through the building with the bell. Shame, Will Levis, shame! You threw
a pick. Well, I think anointing him the king before he wore the crown was not a good idea this offseason.
You should be in a charge of a whole bunch of people.
Well, again, I think
that'd be amazing.
I think that anointing him the king before he was given the crown was not a good idea. And so maybe changing it up and being a little tougher. You know, if being the nice guy doesn't work, maybe at some point change that up. So that's first thing, is I think that they're coddling. And I think, again, I think Brian Callahan might be a little too positive. And I think that what that's done is it's kind of given everybody a false sense over there of what reality is. And I don't think that's necessarily a good thing. I think the second thing that Brian Callahan's done that I am discouraged by is I think Brian Callahan probably bit off more than he can chew. And this is probably common amongst young coaches or young general managers who have never had the experience of doing this before, is the idea that he probably thought he could do more in terms of the quarterback and the offensive line and other things offensively than he's actually been able to implement. And I think PT's a good example of that. You know, they saw the traits on tape that made him the number one recruit at Ohio State. But for some reason, they just figured that whatever it was, Ryan Day and Ohio State and Mike Vrabel and the Titans couldn't get the best out of PT. But the reality is that PT stinks. And he thought he could do it. So I think that that's probably both with the quarterback and with the offensive line kind of telling. And then the third thing is not the play calling, but it is the play timing, if that makes any sense, which is Treylon Burks does not.
I'm pretty sure that's still play calling.
Putting Treylon Burks out there, we consider that play calling.
Well, go ahead. You said it. Play timing. Okay,
yeah.
Explain.
The play time explain that play some of timing. These guys are getting. The guys out there that need to be on the field are Calvin Ridley, DeAndre Hopkins, Tony Pollard. You can take whatever other two eligible receivers you want. I don't care. But those guys have to be on the field the majority of the time. And I feel like there's been this crazy thing where all of a sudden we think like the Titans offense is the Golden State Warriors from when they had Durant. And it's like, well, what do? You know, Steph's got to get his shots and Durant's got to get his shots and Clay's got to get his shots. And no, you know, to me, I don't look at Robbie. I heard you ask a question on the text line the other day. Someone said to Paul, how do we get Chig the ball more often? Let's worry about getting Ridley the ball more often. Let's worry about getting Pollard the ball more often. The guys that are good. Instead, they play Treylon Burks 35 snaps a game. They get nothing out of them. Each game continues to be the same, and yet Brian Callahan just keeps on playing them. Just keeps on playing them. So that actually bothers me more than the actual play calling, which, again, it's hard to judge a play caller when they don't have an offensive line, but I haven't seen any massive red flag issues there.
Who's NWI in the Golden State Warriors? That's my question. Barbosa?
Who was the center from Vanderbilt that was on those teams that never played?
Festus?
Oh, come
on. Festus, I think, was on the early edition, but okay. Damian Jones. Didn't they draft Damian Jones?
That beats
yeah,
me.
That's, come on, man. NWI, that's your answer.
Come
get
on,
out
Looney.
There more.
They got a receiver making
NWI more.
Solid player. They got a receiver making $23 million that has 9 catches. Neither one of you have a problem with the play calling. Interesting.
Well, again, what are they supposed to do? I mean, you're
going
to tell
Will Levis
to throw him the ball every play?
And not every play, but you can call some plays for Calvin Ridley. That does happen in the National Football League.
Well, in Jared's defense, I mean, I do agree, like, in terms of getting someone the ball, that's the answer, right? I mean, so if you want to call that play calling, sure. I mean, it's like he's option one, get him the ball, force feed him the ball, throw him a screen, whatever. No question. And I know Callahan said it this week, you know, that's foremost on his mind. They got to get him involved.
We'll have more Jared versus –
I will say this.
Go ahead.
I'll say there's one guy on the team. Like, I don't think that a bad team that is limited with the amount of plays they can call in a game can really figure a scheme out and try to win the game that gets multiple people the ball. I think you can really only do that with one guy. You know, like you can go into a game and say, we're getting Derrick Henry the ball, or maybe two. Derrick Henry and A.J. Brown, but the Titans weren't bad when they had A.J. Brown. But I don't think you can have, like, you know, a lot of different ideas other than, hey, like, throw it to the open guy and then let's try to get this one guy the ball and devise a scheme for him. And for me, that's Pollard. Because I think Pollard's the best player in that offense. I don't care that they're paying Ridley more money. I think Pollard is better at what he does than Ridley is at what he does. And what I thought was stunning was, again, who knows how true this is because Pro Football Focus said it, but they said against the Dolphins, the Titans' offensive line was so bad that they averaged negative 0.4 yards before contact, and Pollard still had 88 yards rushing. So, I mean, I think we've seen Derrick Henry that he, again, looks like the same Derrick Henry when he's got a competent line behind him, which gives me hope for what Tony Pollard is. So if I'm sitting there, I don't care how much money I've paid Calvin Ridley, I'm looking at, okay, if I have to devise getting the ball to one guy, it's Pollard before it's Ridley.
We'll have more Jared versus Joe coming up next. You're listening to Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Jared versus Joe happening on our program this week. Rex Road's
and it's presented by Pella Windows and Doors of Nashville.
And it's presented by Pella Windows and Doors of Nashville. Jared Stillman is with us here on the program. Jared, you start on this one. If the Titans lose this game Sunday, they've got Buffalo and Detroit coming up on the road after that, which means they very well could be staring at the possibility of 1-6. So let's say that situation plays out and they end up 1-6 after the Detroit game. Should Will Levis continue to be the quarterback after the Detroit game if that's the case? Will Will Levis continue to be the quarterback after the Detroit game if the Titans fall to 1-6?
What's the scripture say, Robbie? If he gets you to it, he'll get you through it?
Sure, yes.
So if Will Levis can get you to 1-6, then Will Levis can get you to the number two pick in the draft. If you lose this game, you know, this game against the Colts, I truly believe Amy should be more upset if they lose this week to Indianapolis than she was when they lost to Green Bay against Malik. The Colts' best quarterback on the team right now is Joe Flacco. And they're going to play Anthony Richardson. He's a full participant. And they should play Anthony Richardson. But right now, if you're asking me who gives them a better chance to win a game, the same way that Mason Rudolph gives the Titans a better chance to win a game, Joe Flacco probably gives the Colts a better chance to win a game. And Richardson, there's no doubt in my mind, he's still injured. He just is going to play injured. Jonathan Taylor probably is not going to play. He's their best player on offense. DeForest Buckner is on IR. He's their best player on defense. Michael Pittman Jr. just got put on IR. And so the Colts have all kinds of injury problems. They're 32nd on defense in the league. And it's not just, well, they're really bad in one area. They're 29th versus the pass and 31st versus the rush. So they're awful. In fact, Malik had a higher passer rating against the Colts than he did against the Titans, which is amazing. Trevor Lawrence, who has been terrible this season, completed 83% of his passes for 371 on Sunday. So between that and the fact that the Colts have one receiver, Alec Pierce, and the Titans have one corner, L'Jarius Sneed, I really feel like, I mean, it would be so inexcusable if they lose this game. They'd have no chance of beating Buffalo or Detroit, even in the weird NFL. I mean, at that point, aren't you kind of pot committed to tanking? If you lose this game Sunday, and we assume they'll lose at Buffalo and at Detroit, I mean, changing the quarterback's not going to get fans in the stands. Changing the quarterback is not going to change the morale, I would assume, you know, around town. Changing the quarterback's not going to do anything, but have you picking 7th in the draft, 9th in the draft. So at that point, why even do it?
Yeah, well, first of all, you know, you're not committed to tanking because we can be. We can talk about it. And we'll be talking about draft picks for so long. It'll be just fantastic. But no, they will not be committed to tanking. If you're Brian Callahan, you're that staff. You know, with this owner, you think we're good? Let's go. Let's just go 2-15, and no, everything's all fine. No,
sometimes they're not going to get a say because I don't think Doug Marrone in Jacksonville was totally keen on the idea of playing Mike Glennon at quarterback over Gardner Minshew when Gardner Minshew was healthy in 2020, but. I think the Jaguars were more interested in Trevor Lawrence. And, again, I mean, Marrone lost his job, so I don't think that playing Glennon gave him a better chance to keep his job.
Hey, Jared, do you realize you've said like 85% of the words here, okay? Just pipe down for a second. So the answer to me, Robbie, is I need to see how it happens. Like if those three losses are completely on Levis, and he continues to do this stuff, and he's not doing anything good. And again, like, there's some decent, he has some decent pockets, he has some guys open, he's just bad, just terrible. Yeah, you know, I think it, at some, you may not be too far at that point from being like, okay, I mean, just to get the misery over with, not make him endure it anymore, not make this team go out there every week and endure it anymore, put in Rudolph, and, you know, and you probably know at that point. It just didn't work out well. But to me, it's got to be, I mean, it's got to be on him. It's got to be, like, if there's nothing positive, if he is not showing any sign of progress at all, then that's when I would do it. Other than that, I mean, I keep going. I mean, if there's some good, some bad, if he's showing you anything at all, then I think you keep going with him. And again, that may be a fank. I mean, I embrace the fank, the fake tank, but you're not going to be committed to a tank, you know. But to me, it's just hard to answer that question without knowing the performance level of the QB.
Well, okay, let's say he plays the next three.
Well, let's say he plays the next three like he's played the first four.
Yes.
Then would you not say at that point, Joe, like, I mean, it's now that we're talking about seven games at that point. I mean, do we still need more time to figure out if there's a corner to be turned?
Is Robbie asking the questions or are you asking the questions?
That was the exact question I was going to ask.
That was your question?
It was.
Okay, and this is it's actually a good question, but I still want to give credit to Robbie for the question and not Jared. That's close, man. I'd probably keep going with Levis. Not that there's been much good. I mean, again, it's like, okay, so are you saying, when you say that, are you saying there's like a behind the back for a pick six in there somewhere? You know, like, I mean, like, how he has played. Here's the great one. If you take out those killer turnovers, you know, is that what we're talking about? Or he continues to have just utterly killer turnovers?
Jared?
I mean, I would say that even the ones that he's thrown, like a pick six, I know that Kurt Warner can get on there and post a video talking about how acceptable that pick six that Will Levis
and
threw against
and then you
was,
can try to find the conspiracy that he must be somehow like part of Will Levis'
management
team, right?
He must be
right?
on the payroll for Will Levis. I don't understand.
Investigate.
You know, one thing if he,
investigate for
it'd be
us.
One
is Kurt Warner hired by Hellman's? Did Hellman's hire Kurt Warner?
It would be.
Was he stocking Hellman's in those Warner shells Foundation. In Iowa?
But no, in all seriousness, like, it would have been one thing if Warner had defended the pick six and then ignored the, you know, the dropping defensive lineman. But the fact that Warner, like, had to go to the wall for both of them, you know, makes me think it's kind of
must
like
be something there.
Sacred cowism or something. But, again, I mean, when it comes to the turnovers, I just don't know what's next. Like, every game it's something new. Again, the flick against Chicago was probably the most boneheaded thing he did. But when we're rationalizing or accepting the terrible turnovers that he's having in these games consecutively with the idea of it wasn't as bad as the other ones, that's pretty pathetic. I mean, I feel like the next interception Will Levis is going to have is going to be one where he throws it to a guy whose back is turned to him, and the ball gets stuck in the crevice of that guy's butt cheeks, and all of a sudden, somehow he comes away with it for an interception, and we're going to say, well, how can you blame Levis? The ball stuck in the guy's rear end like a vacuum. Like, how do you do that? That's what, I mean, but then we'll make excuses. Kurt Warner will put up a video. It'll be fine.
Very descriptive on that incoming interception for Will Levis.
Well, yeah, there's got to be.
What would that one be
each
called?
Each week, it's like more
miracle
creative.
Crack?
So it's got to be something. Like, each week, it's something new. He's running out of bad things to do.
This is a tough competition today. There was not as much disagreement as there normally is between you two guys. I think I'm going to award Jared the winner today. I like a lot of the points he made about Brian Callahan. Way to go, Jared. Congratulations on your victory in the competition.
Whoa. You didn't explain it. Why did he win?
I just told you. I liked a lot of the points he made about
like
Brian Callahan. I'm really mad at both of you that neither one of you had a problem with the play calling when the receiver is getting paid $23 million a year, has 9 catches on 19 targets. I should award none of you.
Let me tell you something Floyd Reese told me years ago. He said, just because you pay a number four receiver like a number two receiver does not make him a number two receiver. And I think with Calvin Ridley, it's like, hey, man, just because you pay him like he's a low-end number one receiver does not make him a number one receiver. And I think that might also be a little bit of the problem.
Okay. There's another awesome Jared point. I want to hear all these amazing points you love. Next segment, you detail all the great points Jared made, Robbie.
I will.
Somebody is upset they got back from vacation.
He's not back
yet.
They
got a reality
check. He's mad at the beach. Mad at the beach.
Yeah. I'm going to go jump in the ocean now. Pissed off.
Jared versus Joe is presented by Pella Windows and Doors of Nashville.
Thank you, Jared. Congratulations on your win. We'll see you later.
Thank you.
Jared Stillman, our guest here on the program. We'll react fully to Jared versus Joe coming up next. The Rex ran at 7:45. This is Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, the game. This week's Nashville's best deal is Fog Street Lawn Club. Get half off a $30 gift card now at thegamenashville.com/deals and dive into the ultimate rooftop experience, British lawn bowling, scrumptious bites, and premier soccer pub vibes. Get half off a $30 gift card to Fog Street Lawn Club now while supplies last. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rexer. I got some tickets to give away, more tickets to give away to see the Preds take on the Seattle Kraken at Bridgestone Arena on Tuesday, October 15th. Caller 5-615-737-1025. 615-737-1025. Caller number 5 will win a pair of tickets to see the Preds take on the Kraken at Bridgestone Arena coming up on Tuesday. Congratulations to Jared Stillman in his most recent victory in Jared versus Joe. Joe, your response?
Yeah, well, actually, this is a good – every once in a while I'll be like, you know, this is not fair. We should have Jared versus Joe like part of the time on our show, you know. But actually, forget that. Yeah, because you're just going to be a BS judger,
no.
So that's fine.
No.
That's fine. Wait, give me Caroline. I want Caroline back. Wow. Sometimes Caroline, you know, goes with – you know, some predetermined stuff, and that's tough, though. I mean, for anybody to have to award Jared a win in a sports argument is like you have to do mental pretzeling, like, to the nth degree. So,
well, he brought up some things with Brian Callahan that I am also concerned about. Look, you know, we've talked about why has Will Levis regressed to this degree? Why is Will Levis not making the wow throws anymore? Why is Will Levis not looking the same that he looked last year? Why is there some of the boneheaded turnovers happening with Will Levis that we didn't see a year ago? And one thing that we've not really talked a ton about with that is, like, the coaching. Like, Brian Callahan was brought in to maximize Will Levis and the strengths that he has. That has not been the case so far. And, look, I'm not saying that that's some grand indictment on Brian Callahan and the type of head coach he's going to be, but I do think you have to look at what we've seen to this point and ask yourself, all right, is what Brian Callahan is asking him to do, is that having a negative effect on Will Levis? There are some concerning things that I'm seeing right now on the Callahan-Levis dynamic that worries me about that moving forward. So that's why he won.
Well, yeah. I mean, well, you said that well. I didn't hear that from him. I just heard him say, man, just talking. But I will say that it's fair to look at the whole thing and if it flames out with Levis, be like, okay, so Brian Callahan, I mean, he said it to anybody who would listen, and I believe him. I don't think he was BSing or just trying to like pump Levis up with false confidence. He was excited about the opportunity to coach Will Levis. He saw a lot of potential in Will Levis. And again, then as you go through the offseason, you know, he does different interviews and things like that, including locally, but you know, in particular, some podcasts. I think it was even like the Bussin' with the Boys and stuff. As he had been in the building with Levis, like even more excitement. And you know, that doesn't, I said at the time, say it again, doesn't surprise me, because I think Will Levis, for all the, yeah, you know, if it flames out, people will like blame it on, someone will want to blame it on Mayo, you know. But the reality is Levis wants to be great, and I think does the things needed to be great in preparation for getting on the field. But you just can't. Then it's different. Then you're on the field, and then can you do it? But if it flames out, then it's like, okay, so this guy, Brian Callahan, he comes in, he's supposed to be the QB guy. Look at his history with QBs, and now this goes that badly, that quickly? You know, I mean, I think it's not to say like there's any sort of, you know, job security that should be tied to that at all. I don't think there should be, and I don't think there will be.
Yep.
But it's a big deal for Brian Callahan too to figure this out, and like, you know, the best coaches take what players can do and then and fit things around that, as opposed to like Burrow does this great. I want you to do it just like him. I mean, they're different players. So, and I'm not saying that's exactly what's happened. I mean, I just think a lot of these issues that have happened are just, I mean, just like Levitt. Again, if you're Callahan, who we all know is a pretty measured, positive person, like I disagree with Jared on him being too positive. That was a dumb point he made, but you apparently didn't want to knock him for that. You know, he's like, oh, what are you doing showing him, you know, other guys may pick? You should be like, you suck. It was a terrible pick. If I mentioned that today, you suck, Levis. Yeah, great point, Jared. But, you know, there is a lot to this that will be, you know, kind of put on Callahan. And then it's like, okay, well, then whoever is next, let's see it. Because you can look back on Callahan's career and say, and of course, he doesn't take any credit for Peyton Manning. He's not trying to take credit for it. That's just a great experience for him. Then he's with Stafford. And then Burrow, that's where you want to give more credit, right? Yeah. Because he was more specifically involved in that. And Burrow had some issues early, but, you know, nothing like this. But no, this is a big Levis's outcome, not just for like the future of the franchises like that, is also important for Callahan. So there's a lot of pressure on him too to figure this out.
There's another thing, like they'd absolutely need to win this game. You know, they're a 2.5-point favorite. It swung yesterday, so Indy was a 1.5-point favorite. I guess now that it looks like Richardson is going to play, they've docked Indy some points for that. So Titans are now up to a 2.5-point favorite on the FanDuel Sportsbook. Indy's defense is bad. It's just flat out bad. And I know the Titans offense has not been good, so maybe this is a get right game for Indy. We'll see. But you're at home, you know, you're coming off the bye week, so you've got some energy to you. You're going up against a defense that has been shelled all year long in the running game, and then last week got absolutely eviscerated in the passing game. Like, this should be a game where the offense looks good, takes a step forward, and you move the football, score some points in this game. Like, if they lose to Indy, this season is it's in dire straits for sure, but it's in like, oh my God, are people going to keep watching this straits if they lose to Indy? Because I think 1-6 is right around the corner if they do lose to the Colts on Sunday.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. Like, you have to find a way to win this game. And I guess I'll give Jared credit for this point. I mean, Trevor Lawrence did look like an all-pro against these guys last week.
Their defense is terrible.
The guys just wide open all over the field. So it's a bad team. And yeah, I mean, that's with Richardson, you know, of course, there's always the opportunity for some big plays against you. But I do think that you have a better chance to beat that team with Richardson instead of Flacco. You probably, with both teams, if you had Rudolph Flacco, you'd have a boring-ass game with both teams feeling a little bit better about their offenses. But, you know, the second-year guys have to play.
615-737-1025, our phone number. We'll have the Rex Rant with Joe Rexroad coming up next. Teron Davenport will be with us at 8 o'clock. Pigskin Pick'em coming up at 8:30. All that ahead. Join Jared Stillman, Chris Sanders, Derek Mason at John Bon Jovi's Nashville this Sunday for the pregame show, 9:30 to 11:30. They'll break down the Titans matchup against the Colts, give you the latest updates before the game. Pregame show presented by Parman Tractor and Equipment, Sundeck Nashville, Sloan's Motorcycle ATV, and award-winning Blue Note Juke Joint and Blue Note Crossroads Bourbon. This is Robbie and Rex Road, 1025, 1063, the game.
Sometimes he wakes up on the wrong side of the bed. And sometimes he's just, well, Joe.
Awkward moment, let's do it.
This is the Rex Rant, now on Robbie and Rex Road.
In the time of chimpanzees, I was
to the Fat and Bald Show.
Butane in my veins and mouth to cut the chuggy with the plastic eyeballs.
And I'm going to egg your house.
Yo. Cut it. So.
And I'm going to egg your house.
It is that time of the day, time for the Rex Rant with Joe Rexroad. You can check it out every morning here on the program. We've been had some PK rants this week, had some Rob rants this week, and now we got a Rex Rant. Joseph, the floor is yours.
I've already forgot, like, what was the egg your house thing about?
I don't remember, but we need to rediscover what that was about. Oh, yeah. Nick remembers. Well,
I recall.
What is it?
I recall. So you were talking about, Joe, maybe this will be a key phrase for you to remember the story. But from what I recall, it was about you and Gus going around the people's houses and throwing eggs. Is that what it was? I mean, I know that much.
Gus, my dog?
Yes, you said you and Gus would
Gus
go
got
around.
A heck of an arm.
Yeah, you said you and Gus would go around, he'd be in the passenger seat, and he would ride with you, and you would just go egg people's houses.
Yeah, but there had to be a causation for this.
I don't remember.
No. Okay.
I haven't actually egged anyone's house, dude. What are we
talking
about?
No, I know,
about?
But you were talking about it.
Okay. There was something like it was like, because of this, I would... Hey, someone's got to remember. Someone out there's got to remember. Help us out. Help us out if you can remember. I'm going to talk Vanderbilt football a bit today. And, you know, we rip on Vol Twitter a lot on here. We have fun with Vol Twitter. We love Vol Twitter. We also sometimes are just absolutely mortified at what we see from Vol Twitter. I got to get after Vandy Twitter today a little bit. And I apologize because I don't have the tweet in front of me. But, you know, a lot of Vandy fans on Vandy Twitter, it's like door, you know, door to door. You know, there's like a lot of door in the titles. This was definitely door something, okay? And it was like there was, you know, a lot of – there's been this constant celebration all week. I'm seeing Clark Lee and Diego Pavia on, like, Jim Rome and – I forgot Jim Rome had a show, but on Jim Rome and, you know, and Dan Patrick, like, all over the ESPN, and they bring out Johnny Manziel to surprise Diego Pavia. And Johnny Manziel's like, I'm going to come for a game. And I'm like, don't come for a game. Don't let that dude come for a game. But anyway, it's still pretty cool because Pavia, you know, loves that guy. But on Vandy Twitter, so there's all this Alabama content. Feinbaum, everybody's talking about the Alabama fans are freaking out. Kalen DeBoer wore a T-shirt, and they're flipping out about that. You know, it's great. So this door whatever is like, hey, guys, we have a game against Kentucky this week. Can we focus? And I was like, let me tell you something. Don't you ever stop talking about this Alabama game. Don't you ever look forward. I don't care what happens the rest of the season. You will always talk about the Alabama football game. Fans do not have to move on to the next game. Fans do not have to study film. Fans get to bask in this. If you're a Vanderbilt fan and you have suffered, especially if you're a Vanderbilt fan who actually was there, which means that you are a loyal fan and you have been going for decades, let's say like a Jimmy Wyatt, you never, ever stop thinking about this game or talking about this game. Don't you dare take that joy away from people. So I went back. I'm like, when was the last Vanderbilt win that was this big? I mean, like we talk about James Franklin's 3 years all the time, and it was great. Hey, overall, like the success level was certainly an outlier relative to Vanderbilt's history. But like, again, like his biggest win was against number 15, not very good Georgia team.
Yes.
Like that, you know, like, which is great. I mean, again, he won at Florida.
People got Florida really mad at me for saying that he was really good while Georgia, Florida, and Tennessee were all down. So I don't want to say it again, make more people mad.
It's true. So if we have to get after Randy Twitter for that too, that's true. That's how it goes sometimes. I mean, that stuff matters. So I tried to think back, like, okay, we know they beat Bama last time in 84, but you got to remember too, like, that's the immediate. You know, Bear Bryant retired in 82. Like that was a stretch there. Like Alabama and Stallings, Gene Stallings got them back up to win it all in like the early 90s. But I mean, yeah, they had some kind of lean years. Really, Alabama, if you're of a certain age, you actually remember like they've had long stretches of them not being that great either. You know what I mean? So I went back. I think that the biggest win, this is the biggest win, okay? The SIAA. The Southern Conference, they tied Washington and Lee for the championship in Dan McGugan's season of the last time he won a conference championship, 1923. That's 101 years ago. That team lost a real tough one to Michigan at Ferryfield, Ann Arbor, a nice 3-0 loss. They also lost to Texas.
How was that game?
I lost my credentials, so I had to listen on I had to listen via Morse code, but I think the biggest win was probably that year against Tennessee. They beat Tennessee 51-7. So they beat Tennessee, Georgia, and then to Clint. Probably the biggest win. This is the biggest win since November 29th, 1923, a tough season ending in front of about 17,500 people at Dudley Field, a season ending 7-0 grinder against Sewanee. Beating Sewanee, okay, at the end to cap the season. And, of course, back then there were no rankings or anything like that, but Vanderbilt ends up tied for a conference championship. I mean, seriously, A freaking century, folks. So you know what? No, you don't stop talking about the Alabama game. You bask in this glory, and whatever happens here. And you know what? I think that if Vanderbilt can capitalize, it can get to a bowl game with this team, get that extra time, get that extra practice, kind of show it wasn't just this complete fluke out of nowhere. I think we know that for those of us who've watched this team play, but for the nation at large, it's a big deal. And then this can really turn into something. But regardless, whether that happens or not, that day, that win is going to be etched in your brains forever. You should never stop talking about it.
I agree. By the way, Ethan on the YouTube chat pointing out that the egging the house stuff was in relation to your neighbor shooting fireworks on like July the 9th.
There you go. That's right. It was my threat. Yes, I did threaten. Like, if you keep shooting off fireworks and freaking out my dogs for no reason when we're way past July 4th, then I will egg your house. Thank you. I knew there was like, it kind of made sense in some way.
Thank you,
and
Ethan.
It sort of does.
Yes.
Yes, thank you, Ethan. Very much appreciate it.
We appreciate it. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. We'll take your thoughts on our phone and text lines, which, as always, are driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Teron Davenport will be with us coming up next. We'll look ahead to the Titans and the Colts coming up on Sunday at Nissan Stadium with him. This is Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, The Game.